Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 747, How Nostalgia Can Hurt a Franchise, recorded on August 8th, 2020. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm, and I have a special guest with me on this off-schedule podcast. As you probably have noticed, if you're our normal live stream viewer of the show, you did not catch this one. That's because we're doing this one not on our normal Thursdays, but I have the awesome opportunity to sit down with the folks from Sacred Icon Halo, including Brian's Bane and Jovial Joshi. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
Yeah! Thank you so much, man.
Dude, this awesome is an honor, man. I'm super happy to be here.
This is an awesome opportunity. Like, the opportunity is ours.
We've been trying to get this going for quite some time now. It's good to finally get it going.
Yeah, it's like when me and Jess started doing the podcast, we wanted to do like two episodes a week, and we're like, man, our schedules are wildly different. We can barely narrow down one. So then when you were the first person to want to like guest us, I was like, it was really hard. So this is actually the first time we've been a guest on anyone else's podcast. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is making my day. This is great.
Well, we're happy to have you guys on. I know you guys have had quite a few guests of your own, including some returning guests, especially from your latest episode. Yeah. I did actually want to try to be all caught up on your podcast. Unfortunately, I didn't quite get there. I'm about a month and a half behind.
Oh, well, we threw you a couple five-hour episodes at you, so that's really our fault.
Yeah. You know? I get the one, then I'll hop on the Discord. I'm like, what the heck did you guys do over here?
Yeah, which is kind of crazy because that's definitely not normal for us. Like, no. 5 hours is rough. I mean, I get fatigued at two sometimes now. Yep. So.
Well, interesting story is when I first started doing the podcast for Podtacular, I guess maybe not when I just started, but shortly thereafter, a lot of the podcasts that I did were kind of that 2.5, 3.5 hour, and it was all over the place. And now with the other co-hosts that I have, our schedules are a lot more tight, so it's a lot more closer to 2 hours for a lot of the podcasts nowadays. But yeah, definitely when we were starting out, it was like a lot longer episodes, and some points it got really long. I think our longest episode we've had so far is over 5 hours long.
Oh, nice.
Wow, yeah.
So crazy, no stranger to that, but we definitely try to keep it shorter for the listeners.
It's nice to feel like you can listen to three podcasts in 5 hours instead of one.
Right. Yeah. So as we do for all of the guests on our show, we have a couple of questions to ask the both of you. It's kind of our quick icebreaker, so to speak.
Cool. Oh, I like it.
First one is, how did you get your start in Halo? And I know you guys have talked about this on your podcast, but for those of our listeners who may not have heard of you or might be now going over to check out your podcast, what was that spark that got you interested in Halo? And we'll start with Brian.
Well, and I'll try to not, you know, hit over all the same beats I hit over before, but you know, I am 28 now, so I was 9 years old when Halo 1 came out, and I was very much a big Nintendo fanboy. So, because, you know, fanboy wars are a really cool thing when you're a kid. So I was like, I don't want anything to do with Halo. I think the only reason people say it's good is because it's owned by Microsoft. And this was a 9-year-old thought, you know, like, oh, this is because it's Microsoft. It's not actually a good game, it's just because it's Microsoft. So I avoided playing it, didn't have any interest. And it all came down to, it was the Christmas right after Halo 2 came out in 2004. I went over to a buddy's house the day after Christmas, and he had asked for Christmas. This is the thing I always hit on, because I'm like, it's so ridiculous. For Christmas, he asked for an Xbox with Halo 2, not because he wanted an Xbox, not because he wanted to play Halo 2, but because he already owned a PS2 and a GameCube, and he wanted to have all three systems.
Hmm.
So just for like a collection type thing, you want to be the guy that had them all. So so when I was over there...
Gotta
catch them all. So it was like, I'm over there at his house the day after he gets this Xbox with the limited edition of Halo 2, nonetheless, and he's playing his PS2. He doesn't even have the Xbox open. So I was like, well, everyone's been talking about this Halo game. You know, maybe I'll just give it a shot. Can I try Halo 2? He's like, oh yeah, sure. So he goes and he hooks the Xbox up out in the living room, and I start playing Halo 2, and I'm having a pretty awesome time playing Cairo Station, but it's mostly when I get to Outskirts, that I start to see, you know, I start to be able to drive a vehicle, and I start to see kind of some more of the sandbox elements of the Halo universe, and I'm floored. I'm literally floored. I'm like, this, because like at the time, my favorite game was of all time was Ocarina of Time, which is still one of my favorite games of all time, but I was like, this is the best thing I've ever played. I'm like, there's like a, there's cinematic storytelling, there's these, this, these different characters, and I'm like, this Master Chief guy is really badass. Yep. And I was just so into it, and I just played it nonstop, and I got to the first Arbiter mission, and I was like, no. What is this? I want to play as the green guy. So I just literally backed out of the Arbiter mission and just replayed all the Master Chief missions again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because in the beginning, I was like a lot of people where I was like, I don't want to play as the Arbiter. Of course, I love it now. But yeah, so that was the beginning of me loving Halo. I went home to my brother. Nice. And I told my brother, who was even younger than me, I was like, every game you've ever played sucks compared to Halo 2. Trust me,
those
it
are some
sucks.
Strong words.
Yeah, and we'd played really good games. So, but then since I was like, you know, I was at the time of Halo 2, I was like 12 years old. So I had to really, you know, push my parents to get me an Xbox. It was about 8 months later on my birthday, they bought me. I went outside to the car and they had an Xbox with a new copy of Halo 2 and an extra controller in the back. And me and my brother nice. Started playing co-op. And it was just this euphoric, like, yeah, this is the best game ever. And as we've said before, Josh and I both have been, quote unquote, in the Halo community in the fact that we are fans of Halo. We've been on Bungie forums, 343 forums. We knew of Podtacular back when it started, but we just weren't a part of it in the sense of having any face or anyone knowing who we are, you know? So right. It's one of those cases where it's like, yeah, we're new to the community, but we've also kind of been here in the background, like many people are. So, yeah, Halo's been a thing for me since 2004. But, yeah, that's pretty much my story, Josh, if you're...
Yeah, mine's going to pale in comparison because that's, like, one of my favorite stories. Brian can tell me that, like, 100 times, and I just never get sick of it.
And I'm
like,
told you 100 times.
Tell me it from Creighton's, like, his brother's perspective and stuff. Like, I want to hear it. Mine was in... I think it was 2002 because Brian's first one was with Halo 2. Mine was with Combat Evolved. And I remember my grandpa had like one of our nephews over, and I remember he had, do you remember back in the day how you could rent consoles from like Blockbuster and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. So he had rented the console for him and rented him Halo and a couple other games. And I remember I was over there with my dad and we were visiting, and he's wanting to show us all these games, and I'm kind of like Brian. I'm like, Xbox sucks. I'm like, I got a PlayStation 2 and stuff, and I'm happy with that. It's got all the games I want. But I remember in a couple like GamePro and like one or two other magazines, I would see these articles in the back about these LAN parties, and I was like, LAN? I was like, what is that? I didn't understand the concept, but I knew it was popular. So he pops in the game, boots it up, and he's playing that first level, and I just remember like having my mind blown. I feel like everyone says that, but like it really was this unique experience for me because I had played some first person shooters, but seeing that on a console, like I feel like we kind of take it for granted now, but it was really amazing at the time seeing like when you have that one guy that's trying to like lead you out and then the explosion goes off and he just dies. For me, that was like, what is going on? You know,
I like something that Haruspis, it's a term Haruspis says. He says, like, it's a come to Jesus moment. And that's a little strong, but it's like when you play, for us, like, all on this podcast, it's one of those days where when you play Halo, it's like, oh, there's a whole other tier of gaming. Like, there's a whole other level. Like, what I've been playing before hasn't been quite the same, you know?
I could see that. You know? I was used to playing movie licensed kind of games at the time and, like, sports games. So Halo was something on a whole other level in a good way, though.
Yeah, definitely pioneered a lot of different things that we take for granted within the video game industry these days.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. Really, really
Not
does.
To say that they were the originals on everything, but
yeah.
There are quite a few things that's like, you look at Halo and that was kind of the staple that really kicked things off. Like really being able to hone in on the first person shooter mechanics with a controller, being able to have a seamless interaction between going from a first person shooter, like you're in your biped to driving a vehicle, the 30 seconds of fun, the golden triangle, all that kind of stuff that really was engineered by Bungie for Halo.
Yeah, I think, you know, everything's iterative And I think, you know, a lot of times you get in conversations where people want to get in the nitty gritty of like, oh, well, Doom was a popular franchise, you know, first person shooter that was also on consoles before Halo. And then, oh, GoldenEye was really where people played console multiplayer. Like, you're not wrong. Those things did exist and did lead to, you know, Halo. But it was like, Halo was kind of where it was like, we were doing these things like things were kind of rocky and things weren't fleshed out. And then Halo was like, boom, here's a package where everything right. is now coalescing in this package that makes sense.
Yep. So the second question that we normally ask our guests, which we're kind of in a quasi state with this podcast, because normally we would interview you all and just talk about what everything that you guys do. But we actually have a purpose for this podcast. We're actually going to do a dual cast. So we're going to do one half of the podcast here on Podtacular, and then the second half is going to be on Sacred Icon Halo. So if you want to get the full discussion, you're going to actually have to listen to both.
That's so awesome.
I love it.
But the second question is, and it's kind of already inherent by what you guys do, but I think we can expand on it a little bit. What is it that you do within the Halo community? There is the podcast, but in addition to the podcast, is there anything else that you guys get really involved with other than just doing the podcast?
I guess you want me to take that first?
Yeah, you go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting how, like, Josh and I, as friends for so many years, have kind of went through similar phases of, like, growth and maturity, where we both grew up with, you know, playing video games and putting a lot of expectations into video games, putting a lot of our emotions into video games. And just as we were friends and as we've grown up and got older, we've started to, like, we might have been the people in the past that were on forums being very critical of things or saying we hate this or this sucks or that's garbage. Like, we definitely, whenever we talk about being positive, we're definitely people who have been on the other side in the past where we're like, and we've just, as we've grown and matured and, like, just kind of seen things for how they are, we're like, you know, Nothing really good is fostered from that kind of mentality. We've lived it, and it's just like, we would like to focus on the positive things. Now, we would like to look at, you know, what is good in, and I mean, it applies to more than just Halo, but in this instance, what is good in Halo? And so for me and Josh, like, post Halo 5, trying to have a good time in the Halo community, like, whether that's Twitter, podcasting, whatever. And before I even say it, I'll go ahead and say there's plenty of positive people in the Halo community, a bunch, long before we got here. But it was kind of one of those deals where we came in, we're like, there's just, it's kind of hard to scroll through anything Halo related without a lot of, like, you know, horrible, toxic, yeah. or a lot of vitriol, just yeah. things of, you know, our conversations that are conversations between many people that last for hours upon the same things, you know, sprint or no sprint, you know, and those conversations are going to be had forever. I understand that. But so we were like, we just want to come in and just focus on our enthusiasm for Halo and the things that are good about it. And it mostly started as me, I was trying to do some, like, some blogging and stuff like that. And of course, without any, you know, Sacred Icon Halo hadn't been created yet. So when a guy named Brian posts a blog on Twitter, I mean, one person reads it, and that's Josh. So I started the blog, and it was like, you know, I was having a good time kind of, like, talking about that. And those posts are still on sacrediconhalo.com. But it really wasn't, nobody was reading them, was making any traction. So me and Josh kind of talked about, oh, maybe we should start a podcast. And, of course, if you listen to our first episode, it sounds horrible. We didn't have any equipment. We used our phones to record.
So young, we started somewhere.
Yeah. But so we just recorded the podcast, and I don't know what we did because it wasn't great quality, but we had a nice little chunk of people listening right from the get-go. Of course, we plugged it on Twitter, but our Twitter had like 100 followers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just kind of started with, and I guess I'm giving you a really long answer to this, Dustin. But
that's okay.
Yeah. So it basically started with, we wanted to be enthusiastic and positive about Halo. First, it was trying blogging. That really wasn't a thing. And then it was the podcasting, which the podcasting was, like I said, doing moderately well to begin with. But where we really hit our stride was, I was like, okay, Joshua, I'm going to try to market this podcast on Twitter. So I was like, I'm going to ask questions and stuff like this. Well, I asked a few questions, I got some good feedback, and then I think one question in November of last year I asked was like, I really changed it up, and I was like, 343 has seen your content. They've reached out to you. They want to let you pick one thing that can be an infinite, and it will be there no matter what. And it really got people excited, the question. And I woke up and I had like 500 likes and like a couple hundred responses. And this was for an account that had like 100 followers, 200 followers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, well, maybe I should keep doing this. So it just became this thing for me to do 1 to 2 Twitter post questions every day, trying to engage the community positively or enthusiastically. And we're totally open to criticism or people's things they don't like, but everything we do is geared towards the good, the positive. What'd you like about it? Okay, you don't like Halo 5 at all, but you kind of like the Forge. Okay, let's talk about the Forge. That's since that's something you like. So it just kind of came this thing of the Twitter, the podcast, the blog kind of got thrown in the back. Then we started the Discord because some people were like, I think it was actually on late, I don't know if it was on recording or off recording, but Late Night Gaming was like, I'd like to see you guys start a Discord. We kind of didn't know anything about Discord. We started one up and we really didn't think it would go anywhere. And we got a couple hundred people now and some people who are really engaged in there. So it's kind of just been this mixture of Twitter, podcast, and the Discord community. To make a long answer short, the goal of Sacred Icon Halo, positivity and enthusiasm all the time. And it started with our love of the podcast, but it's kind of expanded into a few other branches. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Josh, or if I just ran into the ground.
No, you're good. You're good. I mean, you summed it up very well, better than I could. But yeah, I was going to say to expand on that, like, I think before we had even started, I think Brian was there. He reached a point with Halo 5 where he was just like not vibing with that story. And I remember when, as a huge Star Wars fan, when The Last Jedi came out, that was the first Star Wars movie at the time. I was like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I like this. And it was just these weird moments where we sort of got humbled by these like franchises we love.
And that's
the
word Halo. I should have used. Great
I love
word.
Halo too, but to Brian's respect, he's definitely the bigger fan of the two of us. But I just remember we talked relentlessly over and over and just cycled the same topics of discussion, whether it was The Last Jedi or whether it was Halo 5. And I think as, you know, the years had passed, but somewhat like more so with Halo 5, like, we just kind of reached a point where we're like, we're kind of tired of talking about like what we don't like about it. There's got to be stuff we like. And Brian has always been the sort of guy, is such a good conversation starter. I can see him. He will randomly ask me a question. If he wants to sell me on going out to get Asian food and I'm just completely against going out and getting Asian food that day, maybe I want pizza, Brian will find a way to somehow get this conversation rolling. And he will like sell me with his enthusiasm. So once he started writing the articles, I was like, why don't we just start a podcast and try something like that, you know? And he was like, you know, I was thinking about that too. And yeah, so here we are. But he's done amazing with the Twitter.
Well, I like the thing you touched on that I didn't really touch on is that we kind of had like, we had all those expectations and like being negative about things. But our two big breaking points was for me was Halo 5, where, you know, a lot of the community did not like Halo 5 story. But in 2015, and I've said this before in the past, I didn't handle that very well. Like I just told, you know, I told Josh, I told my other friends, I'm like, Halo 5 story's trash. I hate it. It ruined the franchise. I don't like it. You know, just very heavy. And I've seen this a lot in the community. People who, you know, like Haruspis is one of them. He was like, or Alex, he says he reacted so heavily, you know, to that. He criticized it so much back at the time, you know. And it's like, as these years have went on, it's like, well, you know what? How much of that, like, there's definitely criticism to be had about that story or that game or whatever. But how much of that was our own expectations, our own emotions, our own nostalgia that altered what we expected of that? So mm-hmm. now, and then Josh, he kind of hit the same thing with The Last Jedi. Because Josh, you know, he grew up as a kid thinking, oh, Luke Skywalker's going to be this badass. He's going to, like, he's going to do some crazy-ass duel. He's gonna
still a badass in his own right.
Yeah. But, like, the way he was presented in The Last Jedi was not what he was expecting. So at the time, he was very... He felt very, very emotionally upset about how that was handled. And I was very upset about, you know, Halo 5. But as the years went on, it's like, yeah, like Josh is like, we don't like talking about, we're so sick of talking about the negative. And you go online and you hear the same things talked about over and over again. If we all talked about Last Jedi right now, it would sound like literally every other person who's ever talked about it. So we're just like, let's talk about the good things. And then we ended up finding out like, man, we love Halo 5 for a lot of reasons. You know, that's not discounting that the story was less than what we wanted. And that's not discounting that The Last Jedi wasn't what Josh had wanted, but it's like, there's so much to love there. And once we started focusing on that and just like going into new products and new releases with the expectation that there's going to be some things we like and some things we hate.
Yep.
It's just made life so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wish a lot more Halo fans were like that. And unfortunately, Halo's in the position where a lot of people call out Halo fans as very toxic and very negative and very confrontational in the gaming industry. And it really sucks because there is such a facet of Halo that is so amazing and so awesome. And if you look at all the different ways that Halo speaks to different people, it's like, stop wasting your energy on being negative and find something that you enjoy. And if Halo's not your franchise anymore, there's nothing wrong with that. Halo isn't Halo because of what you think it is.
Yeah.
It's Halo because the folks behind the game made Halo.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it just goes without saying, like, that's kind of why I wanted to make it clear in the beginning. I was like, there was a lot of people, a ton of people doing really good things and being really positive before we ever showed up. That's why I wanted to make that clear, because one thing I really also don't like, and I think people think they're doing something good when they say this, and I respect that they're trying to do good. But I think when people, you know, make a tweet, make a video, make a podcast talking all about how toxic the Halo community is, what they're trying to do is say, hey, I don't like it, I want to be positive. But when they just focus on talking about how toxic the community is, they're kind of fostering the toxicity.
They're contributing to it. Yeah, they're adding fuel to the flames.
Unintentionally. Yep. So for us, it's like we want to just talk about, oh, there's a lot of, you know, look at Podtacular's been here for so long. Look at all these other podcasts. Podcast Evolve, I could go on and on. I could name, you know, people who are doing blogs. Alex doing his articles. I could just name so many people doing good things. Like, let's just talk about them and focus on them. And that's kind of the thing I noticed too, like when like running the Twitter is like, if I get 300 responses and 100 of the responses are really negative, if I don't, and this isn't because I have anything against anyone, but it's like, if somebody responds by saying 343 is trash, if I don't like or comment on their tweet, it never gets noticed, you know? But what your instincts tell you is, I want to go and defend them and say, you know, 343 has done a great job. It's not for everyone. I want to talk to them about it. But you know, if someone's entering the conversation with that much of a hot, blatant take, it's better to just not acknowledge it. And then what I'll do is somebody else will post, they'll go, oh, you know, 343, I don't like their stuff as much as Bungie, but I can really see they've worked really hard. And I definitely loved what they did with Halo 4, or I loved what they did with the multiplayer here. I'll like their comment. I'll engage with them. So that way, when you come across Sacred Icon Halo, you see that Sacred Icon Halo is having all these conversations, interactions with all these people that are saying positive things. And none of the negative stuff's getting brought to light.
Yeah, because I mean, I know, and Brian, tell me if you disagree, but I'm pretty sure you feel the same way. But it's like, I totally understand any criticisms out there. I mean, Brian can tell you, I felt like the most frustrated person in the world when I got MCC at launch night. As a big MCC multiplayer, night, yeah. Like, he's more campaign focused. I tend to be more multiplayer. And we still,
rough. That was really rough.
Yeah, it was so rough. And I just was devastated because I was super looking forward to that. Who wasn't, though? But
well, and something to note on that too is there's nothing wrong with being disappointed or upset, especially if
100%
your expectations have been drummed up to a point from the studio or from Xbox that, hey, this product is going to be great, you're going to have such a fun time, and then when you don't, it's okay to be frustrated, it's okay to not be excited because something's not working. Like, there's nothing wrong with criticism. There's nothing wrong with going with a gut feeling and saying, no, this just actually sucks.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm really glad you said that, because I think sometimes we forget to touch on that enough. You know, MCC came out, it was a product that didn't function properly. If you're angry, if you're upset, if you want to tell 343 you're disappointed in their product, you don't think it was right that they did that, you want a refund, you whatever, you don't want to play it, you're unhappy, tell 343 that. That's true. That's honest. I mean, it's not going to benefit anyone if you just tell 343 everything they do is awesome all the time. But There's no point in saying, I hate 343. I hope everyone there loses their jobs because
you
got to
have a middle ground.
You're no longer providing criticism and sharing your feelings. You are now being hateful. And, you know, and honestly, you know, we can only imagine the people at 343 just tune out that kind of stuff, because how can they gain anything from that? So,
Well, and it's not that they completely ignore that stuff. Obviously, they take that stuff, including positive feedback, with a grain of salt, because a lot of the folks at the studio now have come from the community. There's a fair chunk that you see either through blog posts or through Twitter or whatnot that have originated from the community side of Halo. And there's some people there that were in industry and have stayed in industry, but it's a good mix at the studio. So you're looking at fans of the franchise who want the best for the franchise, and they do care about what the community thinks. So of course they're going to try to do the best that they think is going to appease most of the community. Obviously everyone can't be satisfied, but
yeah,
I mean, it's, there's no point to say that someone should die or someone should lose their job because something didn't go the way that you planned, because you're not the program manager. You're not the one that's dictating how the project is going to be created or made.
Yeah, I agree.
Like right now, I don't like the music for Infinite. To me, it does not feel Halo.
That's fair.
And like, I'm going to be one of the very few people that do not like the music. Nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with the music. The music's good. To me, it just doesn't invoke the feeling that I get with other Halo music from Stephen Rippey, from, I forget who the composer for Halo Wars was, but like all those soundtracks to me had some kind of excitement and enthusiasm built behind it that really flowed well with the gameplay. For me, this music doesn't. Doesn't mean the rest of the game's going to be bad. Doesn't mean I can't enjoy Halo. Just means that that's one part of it that I particularly don't like and I can't relate to other people with.
Do you think it's possible if you hear it like in the game and they see it in context that you might be able to like it more? Or do you feel like it's just kind of like from the outset?
I actually have a long write-up that I need to put on a blog or something, because I was actually talking with a couple other Halo folks about why it didn't really fit well for me. And part of it, like listening to the music in gameplay during the demo and even just as its own separate pieces, there's facets of it where it seems like it touches on Halo, but then it doesn't really have that integrated feeling. Like whenever you have the music that kind of enhances your gameplay, I felt like in certain parts during the demo, it kind of tore me out of gameplay. Like it, this, when you're going, so for the example, one of the examples I used was when you're going up the lift and you're getting that vista, like some of the stuff that I was feeling at the time, and I won't try to spend too much time on this, but what I was seeing at the time is like, okay, I want to be excited to like explore new spaces. But like, I already knew that we were kind of in this down state of like, we've been defeated and Chief's already going out on the mission to try to destroy these anti-air batteries. But as we're going up the lift, there's this part of the music that kind of just gutted me and brought me down. It jerked me out of the emotion I was feeling. And that clashed with what I was expecting. It didn't enhance it.
I think there's like, and obviously I do like the music that's been released personally. I have really enjoyed it. But the one thing I can definitely say where I relate to you, Dustin, is Josh kind of touched on this a bit too, is in that demo, it seems rather quiet a lot of the time. And then the few moments where music does play, it seems much more taking a back seat than it has in other Halo games. In other Halo games, it very much feels like, it feels like the gameplay and the music's kind of coming together. Whereas when even in my own personal opinion, someone who likes the Infinite music, watching that demo, I felt like the music felt like it faded into the background more in a subtle way than it did, heighten the gameplay. And I assumed that has to do more with the fact that it's a demo and maybe it'll be more integrated later. And I've also touched on in a prior podcast that I think they might be taking, and this is just, I'm completely pulling this out of my back pocket, and 343 said nothing of the sort, but it's, to me, it kind of reminds me of Breath of the Wild, because Breath of the Wild was a Zelda game that went open world and made it so, instead of just doing your typical going through dungeons and having a structured story, it was this open world game where you could kind of approach everything in the way you wanted. So the music, in my opinion, and I think it's kind of known, is different in Breath of the Wild, because the music needs to make up for the fact that you could be doing anything in any place at any time in your own free will. So the music, and that's kind of more ominous, it's kind of more in the background, where in prior Zeldas that are straightforward, it's much more pronounced. And I kind of get the vibe maybe for Infinite, because we're going to have so many open world sections where you're approaching things different ways, they may have purposely changed how the music matches with the gameplay, if that makes sense. I don't know.
And you could very well be right. And honestly, I won't fully know until the game comes out and see how the full soundtrack plays together with the game. But I actually kind of have the opposite feeling of what you're having. Like, even though the music in some of the older Halo games is more pronounced, to me, it enhances the moment. It enhances the emotion or the excitement or the fear that you're feeling with any particular part of a mission or that kind of thing.
I agree with that, yeah.
Whereas this one just felt like it kind of, for me, emotionally clashed.
Okay.
And when it did that, it was like, that was a jerk out of like, whoa, that something does not feel right there.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. Yeah, I think for me, it's, I relate to what you're saying. I think for me, it's less of a clash and more of a, it feels more separated. The music feels more separate. So mm-hmm. I guess you could say that's kind of the same word.
I get
what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
I definitely feel like it's always been more the type in past Halo games where it's supposed to sort of complement the sort of like flow of the pacing, you know, and you feel that as you're exploring or seeing these vistas and stuff like that. And I kind of felt after I watched it the first time, I was like, you know what? Parts of this were quiet. And then when the music hit, for me, it was like, okay, I enjoy this music, but it doesn't quite have that boom. I don't know, like that grab me effect because it's just so different. And I've listened to, I think it's two tracks now that they've released, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And I've listened to two of them. And I mean, I'm definitely in a pretty good middle ground with it, like where I'm not really blown away, but I still really like it. But I kind of got to get a feel for it more because I think I've had this. I'm interested to see how it's going to flow. Like Brian said, like sometimes it does feel quiet. Like I'm so used to it being the opposite. I'm so used to the music playing and telling me how to feel. And I'll be like, yeah, I do feel like that. I do want to kick ass, you know, or something like that.
So right.
It's definitely different.
See, I think, and actually this is a great example of kind of like when you were asking us, you know, what we do with Secret Icon Halo. So I think the immediate response from many people who listen to this episode of your podcast, Dustin, are going to go, Dustin doesn't like the music? That's one of the best things. That's one of the best parts of this whole Infinite reveal.
I've already gotten that response on Discord, Twitter, everywhere.
Yeah. So the crazy thing is, even though me and Josh have both been like, yeah, this music's dope, when you said you didn't really care for it, it wasn't what you were wanting. Instead, we were like, okay, I understand that. Tell us why. And now you've talked us through it. And now you've made, because we didn't jump your crap and say, dude, it's awesome. You're crazy.
Right.
Now we've talked through it and we're like, okay, I kind of see where Dustin's coming from. Like there's kind of a clash or a separation. It doesn't tell me how to feel as much. I'm not as worried or I'm not as upset about it maybe as Dustin, but I'm like, I kind of get what he's saying. And that's what I think is so important is when we're like, okay, you have a different opinion. That's freaking awesome. Tell me why. Not because I need an explanation. You can have your opinion. You don't owe me anything. But I would like for you, if you'd like to, explain to me why you feel that way. Because now maybe I can kind of see where you're coming from.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Twitter is one of those platforms is you can only get so much in per tweet.
It's not a great platform for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of the responses is like, are you kidding? Like, what is wrong with you?
No, I get it. I think it's fair to have that opinion, too. And I mean, To piggyback off Brian, yeah, I think it's just one of those things. It's like, I think there's so much more to learn from disagreeing or having a different opinion. Because, like, I was someone at first who didn't like Halo 4 at all, like, just all of it. Now I love it, but at first I didn't. And it took Brian kind of, like, saying, okay, what don't you like about it? I explained it, and he just heard me out, and I was like, I kind of want to talk more Halo with this guy. And I just kept doing it, and then I realized when he started talking to me about some of the lore, I was like, huh? And it like these wheels turned in my brain and suddenly I learned so much more through that.
Sudden clarity.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's some great quotes from Halo.
Yes.
Yeah. I felt the same way about Halo 4 originally with the story and how just the Didact storyline was completely out of the blue. You really had to read the books to even understand kind of the backstory on why it was there. But as I've talked to more and more people over the last few years, it's like, putting that aside, the story with Chief and Cortana is some of the best storytelling within the Halo franchise. And I never really picked up on that until like people were saying, no, like think about the Chief and Cortana relationship, not necessarily the stuff with the Didact. Like even though that is very lore heavy, and that's what I was focused on at the time because I was reading the books. And it's like, okay, there's this big lore lead up and then you get the Didact and all the stuff in there and it's like, ooh. People are really going to be left out if they don't really read the books, and that's kind of a major detachment from people that just play the games. But I never really stopped to think Chief and Cortana's story and how that's going to affect the story throughout the rest of the franchise. And once I started thinking about that, it's like, okay, that actually is a very intricate story piece that plays well with everything that's led up to this from Halo CE through Halo Reach. And it's just this one little facet of the campaign that doesn't really sit well with me. I can leave that aside and not like that, but enjoy the rest of this. And then sure. multiplayer is kind of in this quasi state of like, there are certain things I love about the Halo 4 multiplayer. There are certain things I'm like, yeah, they definitely tried to force COD into Halo.
Yeah, that's a good
yeah,
point.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Dustin.
I think, and I completely agree with a lot of your points. I think Alex said something on the last podcast that kind of made me go, yeah, that's a good point. Alex is of the opinion that none of the reading is required for Halo 4. And his argument is that if you approach Halo 4 just as a game, there is a very clear bad guy with very clear I hate humanity MO. And if you just play it straight as, you know, this is a villain who wants to destroy humanity and you and Cortana got to stop him, from that approach, the expanded material is not needed at all. Now, obviously, reading the expanded material takes your interpretation of Halo 4 from 1 to 1,000, you know, because it's so, mm-hmm. so there's yeah. definitely a ton of credibility in what you're saying. But I think, for me, I think like Alex, I was like, that's a good point too. I'm like, you could, if you just kind of play it straight as, you know, bad guy does bad thing, you can play right. it that way and it works.
I think for your casual gamer, yeah. it could work. But anyone who has some kind of vested interest in sense. Halo, I don't think that works as well.
Yeah, I put, you know. Yeah.
Again, then that's just yeah. my no, take
I
on it.
I think there's a lot of truth there in both, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get on to the topic of what we're going to talk about for this podcast. So we're doing a two-take, kind of like what we mentioned earlier. We're going to take a look at nostalgia and how it hurts a franchise and how it helps a franchise. And obviously, since we're Halo podcasts, we'll mostly talk about Halo, but I'm sure we'll throw some other franchises in there, like Star Wars, Mass Effect, yeah. whatnot. So on the Podtacular side of things, we're going to take the why nostalgia hurts franchises aspect. And then on the Sacred Icon side, we're going to take what helps from nostalgia. So obviously, the big argument within the Halo community is Sprint, whether or not it belongs in a Halo game or not. And there's a tweet that's going around since yesterday that shows that Sprint's been in Halo since Halo CE. The Master Chief sprinting out of the control room on Delta Halo. So even though you might not have been able to sprint, Sprint has been yeah. in the game.
She's been booking it since 2001.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, there's definitely certain aspects of nostalgia that hurt a franchise. Sprint is kind of one of those topics of, okay, your previous games may have had XYZ mechanics, but as the industry evolves and as people's expectations of what is included in a specific genre of video games, those gameplay functions, while they were crucial or foundational at the start, either weren't able to adapt some of these newer functions or gameplay mechanics, or it just wasn't in the state of the industry to have those new things. So that's definitely one of those things where you can't hold on to the past.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'll get stuck in the past and you will not grow with new fans and new game mechanics that add a lot of value and a lot of different ways to interact with the same franchise.
Definitely. Well, I think it's interesting if you look at when Halo 1 came out on console, it was doing things, it was changing things that weren't supposed to be okay. You know, like right? At the time, and I often forget this, but like growing up, for me, every time I played a first-person shooter, I was used to having my entire arsenal on me the whole time. Like I have 9 guns that my one dude's carrying around. And then Halo's like, no, you get 2, and you can constantly choose which 2 you have, but you only get 2. And then they, you know, they're like, okay, you can always melee, you can always throw a grenade. You have a dual stick shooter. Like a lot of the shooters you played had one mm-hmm. stick with a button to pivot, yep. you know, the direction up and down or whatever. So, and then there's also like this whole thing of your console. You can buy this thing called an Ethernet cable, and you can connect your consoles together and do this LAN networking thing. And it's like, all these different things that Halo was doing, it was like, you don't do this. This is not what we've been doing the last few years. Like, this is not... Now, I know Halo is a new franchise.
You're trying something new and we don't
exactly,
like it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I know you can give a little bit more credibility to the fact that it was a new franchise, whereas the whole, like, sprint, no sprint argument is within the same franchise. But, you know, it's like, how how is that game and that series, that franchise, supposed to remain relevant if it's only allowed to do what it did in the beginning? You know, and I think of the games that I enjoyed playing growing up, like Super Mario 64. I love Super Mario 64, and no part of me as a, you know, 5-6-year-old playing that game wanted them to make it a 2D side-scroller. Like, I'm a new generation. I'm a new person experiencing Mario. For me, I want Super Mario 64, and I want all sequels to Super Mario 64 to be 3D, to have that camera control movement. But how many people were going, who are like, maybe they're 30 when Super Mario 64 comes out. Mario is supposed to be side-scrolling. Like, what makes a good Mario game? Proper side-scrolling. Proper, you know, being able to have this field of view. Blah, 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 blah. And they could make really strong points, and they wouldn't be wrong, but does Mario need to be the same thing forever? And also, if I'm playing games like Crash Bandicoot and Spyro, and Mario's only allowed to be a 2D side-scroller, as a new generational kid, am I going to gravitate towards Mario? I'm going to be like, these people are going full 3D. Like, this is really cool.
I don't know. Have you seen Mario Maker and how popular it is?
Don't get me wrong. Good. 2D Mario is dope. But it's like, if one franchise never evolves and never changes, it's kind of like the whole, and I can't believe I'm going right into this already, because I've said on record, I hate talking about Battle Royale. But if you look, and I'm not a Battle Royale fan, but if you look at the entire market right now, you got things like PUBG, Apex, Fortnite. Now Call of Duty has a very successful Battle Royale. Yeah, there's definitely an argument to be made. You know, Battle Royale doesn't need to be in Halo. Halo can be its own thing. I'm actually more of that person. But it's a thing that the industry really enjoys. The new generation, when I used to teach a Sunday school, kids Sunday school for a bunch of middle schoolers, and all they talked about was Fortnite, Fortnite, Fortnite. Halo, Halo, like, to me, Halo's so much cooler than Fortnite, but they're not a part of my generation. What's so cool for them is they get online with their friends for free, and they do this giant open world battle, and they scavenge for guns, and they build stuff, and like, that's way cooler than Halo to them, and they're not wrong. So like, how do we, we're going to continue to get older, we're going to have families.
Don't say it.
Yeah,
so.
Unfortunately.
I'm going to get older.
We're going to have families, children, responsibilities. Our tastes are going to change. Our time's going to change. There's going to be a point where, you know, they do internal statistics on this type of thing. There's going to be a point where they go,
oh yeah,
they go, okay, Dustin, who is, you know, now 50 years old, is likely to maybe buy our $160 game once every 3 years. But if Halo appeals to someone who's turning 18, we've done the statistics, they're going to buy the game, the DLC, the collectibles, the shirts, the hoodies, the, you know, everything. Like, they can see that the audience is going to be much more likely to spend money at this age or whatever. So why not make a game that stays true to itself, but also says, okay, we can change it up. We can make a game that's accessible to these kids. Don't want to, you know, how many kids want to go from Fortnite to playing like Coagulation on Halo 2, where there's no sprint, you got, you know, 16 players only, like, and, you know, and of course there's going to be a lot of, and I'm kind of going around in circles here, but there's going to be people out there who go, well, if they want that, they can play Fortnite. You're right, but Halo is a product. Halo is something that, if you want it to continue and thrive, it needs to captivate new people. So I think we're, to sum this up and let, you know, Josh or one of you guys go at it, is nostalgia hurts a franchise by, you know, the people that were really, that the Halo revolutionized gaming for them. People that are like, oh man, couch co-op or online matchmaking, only being able to hold two weapons, you know, having the triangle of the holy trinity of, like, you know, melee, grenades, shooting. This is so cool. Like, that captivated us as kids, or, you know, some people, they were adults, of course, you know, all different ages, but now we're 10, 20 years older, different things are captivating people. Nostalgia's hurting the franchise by saying you're not allowed to grow at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, my favorite example for this is Star Wars.
Of course.
Naturally. Yeah. And but I always use The Force Awakens as a good reason why, a good example, because I feel like, so now I'm someone who loved the prequels, and I know there's a lot of people out there who don't. I totally understand. But when it got time for The Force Awakens to come out, even before it was like announced, people were like, if we get another Star Wars movie, we want something that's like closer to the originals. We want it to look like that. We want it to feel like that. Yada, yada, yada. And then that one, by all accounts, is trying very much to focus on the original aesthetic and all that kind of stuff and the feel and the tone and characters and whatnot. And it comes out, and I think at first people are like, we like this. This is good. And then afterward, you start to see this sort of schism that happens. It's like some people got what they wanted, and then they realized, well, now we just got the same thing. We don't actually want that. And you start to see this kind of divide. And I mean, Halo, to its credit, has kind of done the opposite, I think, with 4 and 5. It went into different territory. It didn't try to like be too similar to like the Bungie stuff. But, you know, I think with something like Sprint, I mean, Sprint's a good example, I think, because Brian pointed out to me before, I used to think Sprint originated in Halo 4. And he was like, well, Josh, Sprint started in Reach. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think with that kind of thing, it's like, it's just a tough line to walk. And I always feel for developers in that regard, because it's like, you can sometimes give people what they want. But then sometimes I think, and I could be wrong, but sometimes I think it ends up being, this is something they thought they wanted. And, you know, doesn't always actually equate to reality, you know? I mean, that's how I kind of look at it.
Yeah, it's that whole, I mean, part of it is you have the franchise owners setting expectations for what people are going to expect. Another part of it is fans having their own expectations based off of their own experience. So you have to be smart enough to kind of differentiate the two and okay, this is what I'm expecting, but this isn't necessarily what the producers are going to say is actually going to be in the game or in the film or in the book or whatever the franchise is.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one of those things where you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt. And another part of that is it's not your franchise.
Yeah. I think for me going in, because I know for Brian, it's a little different. Like I'll let you expunge on this if you want to, Brian. I remember going into Halo 4. When I played Halo 4 the first time, I was so out of just gaming at the time. I just played the campaign and was kind of done and just moved on. I didn't touch the multiplayer until far later on. By the time I had touched it, the ordnance drops and all that stuff had been removed from the multiplayer and whatnot. Mm. So when I got to that point and I was just seeing how you could just sprint constantly and it had the loadouts and everything, and I was like, this is like kind of having an identity crisis. And I remember going prior to like seeing anything for Halo 5, I was like, they better not go back to they better not continue off 4. They better go back to like 3 and 2 and 1. And I wanted something like 2 and 3. And I think to go off the topic, I think that was like a real bad fault on my end, because that was really like stopping me from the outset. I was already kind of like deciding before the game had even been shown that I was not going to like what was there. Like before, like if it's going to have sprint, if I'm going to see someone run, I'm done. I'm just going to wash my hands clean of it. Not literally, but like I'm just going to write it off because it has that. And it's like you kind of miss out on stuff you could love. Like you mentioned earlier, Dustin, like new mechanics and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I think another way that like nostalgia really hurts a franchise is, at least I know I'm not the only one who's done this, but I can just speak for myself. You love the franchise so much, and it's been good enough for you for long enough. It's been consistent enough. You want it to always be good and always be consistently something you liked. And then if you arrive at a point where you hate an entry, like for me, it was in the moment, you know, back then, the story of Halo 5, it was like my brain didn't want to accept that like Halo 5 story was an eventual result of something that came after Halo. Like Halo 2 was a story I loved. It was the first Halo game I played. So like in my brain, I'm going like, if only I had known back when I played Halo 2, that was going to lead to Halo 5 story. And it's this OCD thing where I'm like, the game, I need the stories to be good. I need the game to be good all the time, because if any bad blood gets in the water, like it's tainted. So like when Halo 5 came out, there was this very like this hard thing in my brain where I'm going, the whole franchise is soured. I'm referencing 2015, Brian. I had a different outlook on life, but I'm like, the whole franchise is soured. I'm like, Halo 2 and 3 are now worse games because of 5, or somebody else it might be because of 4 or whatever, or maybe it's because of 3. I don't know, but like I started to just, I couldn't separate that the games I really liked are still just as good and relevant as they've ever been. And I think it's the same for Josh. It's like, okay, you know, Josh likes the prequels. He likes the originals. He likes Force Awakens. He gets The Last Jedi. Ugh, don't like the way Luke did this. Luke did that. I don't like this side plot line, whatever. Can't really accept it. Then it's like, you know, when he looks at the whole picture, and I think it's another thing to talk about for him with Rise of Skywalker, it kind of downplayed the importance of Anakin Skywalker. And it's like, if Josh wants to get way too caught up on the nostalgia, way too caught up on his expectations, he can look at that whole nine films and say, well, my favorite movie, Revenge of the Sith, isn't as good anymore because I know that Anakin's story doesn't...
It's tainted.
It's tainted. Anakin's story doesn't matter as much now that I've seen Rise of Skywalker. And a lot of people do that. They go, these old, because of nostalgia, these old things for me aren't as good because the new thing ruined it. And I think that's where you got to realize you've kind of funneled yourself too far down that nostalgia and those emotions, because no, those things are just as good as they ever were, and they count just as much. If you feel like Anakin Skywalker got done dirty in Rise of Skywalker, then he still was done good in Revenge of the Sith, in Return of the Jedi. That's still there, still counts. For me, I'm not one of those people who goes, oh, you know, Halo only counts up to 3. I'm not one of those people. But in my brain, Halo 3 was an ending to me. Halo 3 was an ending to a trilogy, a story that Bungie set out to tell. And it still is an ending. It still has that stopping point. Halo 4 and 5 very much count. They are a continuation. They count just as much as those things. But it's okay to say Halo 3 finished a trilogy. It finished a story. Halo 4 started a new one. Halo 5 continued Halo 4. It's like, you don't have to, when you get too caught up on those things, you know, like, it's just tainting the water. There isn't a tainted, like, you can say as a franchise as a whole, maybe it's tainted the franchise, but, like, still love what you love. Like, don't try to retroactively tell yourself you didn't love something because of nostalgia, you know? That's the way it hurts it, I think.
I feel like that plays into, like, getting older, too, because, like, when you're a kid and you're playing these games, back in the day, people like us would just read these in magazines, and that was our only window into the world of those games, and we waited, you know, and then now it's just the industry's so different, and you have this instant gratification with footage and stuff and leaks and everything. And like, when I played a game as a kid, I just played it, and if I liked it, it was the best game ever. If I saw a movie and watched it, it was the best movie ever. But now you get older, and then all these expectations start to sort of seep in because of this long-running, like, attachment you have to, like, something like Halo. And then you kind of, like, start placing these expectations into him that weren't there before. Like, I remember when Halo 2 came out, I was just like, I loved Halo Combat Evolved. I can't wait to play Halo 2. And I played it, and the Arbiter stuff was weird at first, but I was still like, what is going on? You know, I'm not playing as Chief and all this stuff, and you know, but then you get to, like, for me, I got to Halo 4 and I was like, what is going on? Why is everything so orange? I was like, why is the music? Where's Marty? Where's Michael Salvatore? You know, I kind of let my, all my expectations kind of flow into that. Like, the fact that it felt different, like, I wasn't able to just accept it on its own. I was, like, too busy focused on, it didn't live up. It doesn't feel like Bungie and stuff like that. You know, I think that was, to my fault, a big issue I was having.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of times where we as fans get a little overzealous of what we believe should be the definition of what makes the franchise the franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you look at every Halo game since CE, there's been some addition, some modification to the underlying gameplay mechanics. Halo 2, it was dual wielding. Halo 3, it was equipment. Halo 4, it was ordnance drops. Halo 5, it was Spartan abilities. Every game has had some new addition that changes the gameplay mechanics a little bit, but is still true to what makes Halo, Halo. And it's that sci-fi shooter. You have energy shields and health. You have the weapon, one weapon backpack and one in your hand with grenades and melee and vehicles. The engine is part of it, having some of those wacky effects. I mean, look at the Mint Blitz video, is, I think, over 2 million views now, where it's the bubble shield. And, like, you don't see those kinds of experiences in any other franchise, where it's like, you just have this perfect balance of all these gameplay mechanics, and it comes up with something as gold as that. Yeah. You cannot get that in any other franchise. And if the franchise didn't evolve, we wouldn't have had that.
Yeah. It's pure gold. And I think too, like, we kind of get, a lot of times, and this actually goes for both being negative and positive, but like one way that, nostalgia can really hurt us is you see things get kind of caught in an echo chamber. So like when I played Halo 4, I actually loved Halo 4's multiplayer. Like I loved it. I had a blast. I mean, I loved 1, 2, and 3s. I loved 4s. I just had a blast. I played all the time. And then the narrative started to come out about, Halo 4's multiplayer has an identity crisis. It has, constant sprinting. It has ordnance drops. It's kind of got a lot of Call of Duty elements. It's not as MLG ready. It's not something that can be professionally played. And people started to do write-ups and, like, break down what's wrong with Halo 4's multiplayer and why it's not competitive enough. And then it became this thing where, even though I loved it and never had any problems with it, and obviously I'm not a competitive person, but because it was so well proven and so well known, it got to the point where now even you can even see in Sacred Icon Halo tweets, it's like if I talk about Halo 4's multiplayer, it's like Halo 4's multiplayer was largely criticized by fans because so the narrative is Halo 4's multiplayer either wasn't good or wasn't the best. But that doesn't have to be true for you as a person. Just because that might be the majority opinion doesn't mean that the minority one isn't worth anything. So to tie this into kind of what I'm saying is, for every person out there who's saying, like, if they're sprinting Halo, I'm done, or if sprints in Halo, I can't stand it. For every 10 people, maybe 7 of those people genuinely always hated sprint in Halo, but the other 3 heard it talked about so often by so many for so many years that they've now got it in their head that Halo can't have sprint. It's like, at what point are we just kind of, people are just attaching themselves to little groups. It's like, are you in the sprint or the no sprint crowd? Are you in the armor abilities, no armor abilities crowd? And it's like, some people really do. It truly is a make or break it thing. You cannot have sprint in my Halo or I'm out. But then there's 2 or 3 people that join along with, you make really good points. We can't have sprint in Halo.
Yeah, social media has the detriment of being a giant echo chamber.
Yeah, and it applies, and like I said, it applies to positive things too. If me and Josh keep talking about how, manage expectations and positivity, well then maybe somebody's listened to so much of our podcast, they're constantly managing their expectations and being positive, which is good, but maybe then because we've talked about it so much at length, they start to not acknowledge criticisms, You can fall into an echo chamber of anything, whether it's good or positive. So it's just really, I think we should like celebrate each other's preferences and differences. Your favorite Halo story is 5. That is freaking awesome. Not you're stupid. You're not a true Halo fan. It's like, that's so cool. Why do you like that? Oh, well, I really liked that there was this huge ensemble cast and I thought Team Osiris was badass. And then I loved the Guardian. They looked really cool. Okay, sweet. That's awesome. Like, it's so cool that I can be a Halo fan whose favorite Halo is 2 and yours is 5, and we can go to Outpost Discovery or something like that and just have a great time celebrating Halo. Like, I would like to see that happen a lot more. Like, just be excited that we all have different things. Then you need to, like, the game needs to play like 2 for you to be a true fan. I'm glad that I'm in that me and Josh are in that mentality now, because I wasn't in 2015. Like, when Halo Infinite comes out, there's things I want for it, and there's things I don't want for it. If it was an online-only campaign with a lot of Destiny kind of like grinding for gear, I would personally not like that at all. But I'm going to come on this show, and I'm going to say, what are the good things about it? What things do I like about it? Some people are really glad that it's going this direction. I'm glad for them. I'm happy for them. And I still have the Halo, like, if I want a specifically Halo 2 experience, I can play Halo 2, So
exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of those things that you kind of like, when you get to that point where something nostalgia has really seeped in, you start to almost gatekeep with your opinions too. Like, oh, you don't agree with me? Well, you're wrong. Have fun being wrong over there, Because like, you kind of made me think of it, Brian, actually, like, how many fans got in through Halo 5?
A lot.
Right.
There's a lot of fans out there that got their start with Halo 5.
Yeah,
and every game is like that, because every game is a new generation of gamers.
Yeah,
we look at generations traditionally as like every 20 years. No, gamer generation is every 3 or 5 years.
Yeah. We've got a couple people in our community whose favorite is 5, and like it makes it, when I hear that, I'm thinking like something like Outpost Discovery. Think of how many people who have probably gone, who got their foot in the door through Halo 5, who if people just completely kind of like crapped all over their opinions and stuff, that person, you just take them out of that room now, and it's like we're less as a community because we don't have that, because we let our nostalgia stay in the past and not let this franchise we love sort of nurture and grow and blossom. And you know, there's been like, I remember there was a specific night, it's one of my favorite stories just because I loved MCC release night. And you know, when they had the first footage of Halo 5's multiplayer, and there's this, I love this memory, Brian and his brother, my cousin, myself, were all sitting around Brian's PC right as they're about to reveal this, and we're all like pulling up our chairs, we're leaning in like, oh my god, you know, this is the next era. And for me personally, I'm like, if it's, like I said before, if it's got Sprint, I'm going to hate it. I'm ready to be mad. And then like it shows off all that stuff. And I can't speak for Brian or anyone else, but I know for me personally, I was completely quiet. Like I was so shut up because I was, as I'm processing it, I'm thinking, I think I like this. I think this works. And they're showing that like, oh, if, you know, if you keep sprinting constantly.
Look at this, guys. Think about this for a second. In 2015, I remember sitting there and they showed off Halo 5's multiplayer where it had a freaking assault rifle aiming down sights. And I think the thing got done and I go, well, Halo's dead, but at least we have MCC. Like, I said something crazy like that. Like, guys, that is an insane thing to say. That is, it's very immature.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not to cut you off, Josh.
How was that for you, Dustin? When you saw some of the Halo 5 stuff, what was that like for you? Your first kind of impression?
It was. I didn't really have any adverse like feelings towards it. It was definitely kind of one of those things where, oh, this is new, this could be interesting type of feelings. It wasn't anything where I felt particularly discouraged by anything that I saw, and there wasn't anything that overly excited me, but I was definitely curious and interested what they were going to do with the multiplayer. And now Halo 5's multiplayer is my favorite multiplayer. Yeah. I mean, just look at Super Fiesta.
Yes, it's favorite too, Dustin.
For different reasons. But yeah, it's like the best. I love it. I love Halo 5's multiplayer.
I love Super Fiesta. I hope they bring it back in Halo Infinite.
You know, here's a crazy thought. There could be somebody who turns 9 years old this year, and they play Infinite on Game Pass. Let's say Infinite comes out with a Battle Royale mode, and this 9 year old plays Halo Infinite Battle Royale, and it is the best game he's ever played in his life. And he plays the campaign, and he really enjoys the game. And then a couple of years later, he goes to Outpost Discovery. There's this 13 year old kid who played Halo Infinite like 4 years ago, and it is his favorite game of all time. And he gets to meet Steve Downes, he gets to meet Jen Taylor, he gets to get their autographs on his Infinite copy of the game or whatever. And he just loves Halo. It's his favorite game of all time. And there's people out there who are saying if he fell in love with the game because of a Battle Royale mode in Infinite, he's not a true Halo fan. And it just breaks my heart because I'm like, this kid's passionate about this series that you also were transformed by when you played it as a younger person. And now you're telling him that he can't, his opinion is worth less, or he can't be a part of this group. Like, that's just awful. You know, it's just not acceptable at all. You know what I mean? So it's just cool that he's a part of the series now.
Right. And it definitely is a detriment because you are basically telling newer fans with your nostalgia that you don't belong here. You kind of touched on this a little bit, Josh, already. But you're basically saying you don't belong here because what you are liking about Halo isn't Halo, which is completely not true.
100%.
Because what's Halo to what is Halo to the person is different for every single person.
Like,
take my dislike of the music currently. Like, to me, that doesn't fit what I traditionally think of as Halo music. And not because it's not Marty's music. That's not the reason why. Because that's been some reasons of people have been like countering my arguments. It's like, of course, it's not
Marty's
music.
10 years past Marty, that shouldn't be a conversation anymore.
Yeah, that's not even the freaking point. But you're excluding newer people who grew up with a different definition of what an FPS genre sandbox looks like, and you see a studio trying to evolve with the industry. The industry is evolving. The industry is not changing. And you're telling those people, yeah, I don't like you, get out.
Yep.
Which is, no, completely wrong. Yeah. We want Halo to grow. We want, like, the reason we're excited about it is because we tell friends, hey, come check out this really cool game. And to have that nostalgia and be held by that nostalgia is being like, hey, check out this cool game. Oh, you like that version of it. No, you don't like Halo. Yeah. Go away.
It's awful. No! It's awful.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said if you, like, you know, that almost, if we were to let ourselves as a community become those kind of people, we'd almost be like these grandpas who are like, you know, it's not, they don't make it like they used to, you know, exactly. And then it's just like, you get stuck in this box and then you can't see out of it. And then you're also like, you're in that box and you're kind of like closing the blinds and the windows and the doors and like, you're not letting anyone in with these new perspectives or the, you know, new mechanics and stuff. And you're just like shunning it. And, you know, that's the thing too, is I think another aspect is that with the nostalgia and with how that affects us badly is like a lot of people out there. I think you kind of touched upon it, Brian, but like when you put your voice out there, whether it's like the forums or just anywhere online or like even in person, like there's some people who might like really value your opinion, and like how you communicate that is gonna like flow into how they express that game possibly to someone else, and it's going to create a chain reaction. You know, like I can tell someone who doesn't know anything about Halo and maybe they're looking to get into it, I can say, well, all these ones are great, this one sucks, don't mess with that one. And then they'll maybe go tell someone else who's looking to get into it, like, don't mess with this one.
Could
and
then, be someone's, you know, favorite, like, or latching on point.
Yeah. Exactly. And they miss out on that opportunity to potentially love it just because me at the source said,
that
sucks.
I think like, the thing we don't think about too is like, One of the biggest Halo YouTubers right now is Hidden Xperia, Luke. And a lot of people love his opinions, love what he has to say. He puts out great content. And, you know, people are saying, you know, I really like what Luke has to say. That's the kind of Halo I want. I want the kind of Halo Luke's. So then let's say tomorrow it's announced that Luke is hired by 343 to work on a Halo game. He's one person at the studio. It doesn't matter if his opinions are amazing and that they fit yours perfectly, and Luke's going to go there and he's going to be as diligent as he can to get the game to fit the kind of thing he wants. But he's one of, what, 300-400 people? I don't know how many total people. He cannot sway. He does not going to have the sway to make the game come out exactly as he wants it to be. But I guarantee you Luke's going to be excited to be working there. He's going to love his coworkers. He's gonna promote the game. He's gonna be excited to see what the first Halo game that he's worked on is like and release it to the public. And then when it comes out and somebody sees Sprint, they're gonna go, "Whoa, Luke! I trusted you, bro. I wanted you to get hired by 343, so there wouldn't be Sprint." And then, well, what's then he has to say? Well, you know,
yeah, that's not how it works.
Nobody has 100% control on that. Easy. You know, there's just too many facets to that type of thing. So. It's like, it's almost like, okay, let's say for a second you're right, and true Halo is Halo 3. Halo 3 is how Halo should be forever. Let's say you're right for a moment. How are you going to get 300 to 400 people all together to passionately, you have to be passionate to do this kind of job, to passionately get together and develop it, the exact same thing and have the same exact wants and desires? And if you watch all the Bungie documentaries that I'm sure everyone in this conversation has watched 30 million times, you see how vehemently they disagree on things, how one person wanted this story direction and one person wanted this multiplayer direction, and they end up putting out a product that not everyone loves everything. Like, there's probably not, I wouldn't be surprised, there's probably not a Halo game in which everyone at Bungie said, "I liked everything about it." There's probably someone going, "Man."
No, there's certainly not. There's certain parts of the studio that love Sprint and think Sprint's awesome. And there's some parts of the studio that don't think Sprint's in there. But that's where it's up to your project managers to make those decisions of, okay, get a feel for what, like, there's a whole community team that's going to go out there and say, okay, this is what the community is feeling. We need to take all this into consideration. But at the same time, here's what the industry is doing. And here's what's successful. They're still a business. They still need to make money because in order for them to keep making games, they need to make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because like if they kept making like Halo run like Combat Evolved or 2 or 3, that's just not, it's slow by today's standards. You think it's something like Fortnite or even like Titanfall, where you're running on the walls, and like how Call of Duty is fast. I'm not saying you have to be like those, but
Titanfall is fast.
Yeah, the tempo and the flow is so different now that, like, you know, when you put yourself in the position of someone at 343 or Microsoft or even Sony or Nintendo or whatever, like, yeah, you want to, there's a part of them that very much want to appeal to the people that have been playing these always. But then it's like, you want to still continue to bring new people in. Okay, how do we do that? Oh, right. we were going to try to make a game that literally played exactly like Halo 2 and had the same flow. Well, you know, like, well, I don't know point, if that's going to...
All you're doing is adding DLC onto a game that already exists. You're not really changing the engine. You're not changing the gameplay mechanics. Okay, just add DLC. That's way easier to do.
Yeah.
If you want to make a game that stays current with the generation, you have to let go of holding on to exactly this framework and be able to go on to something else, because the industry's changing.
Yeah, I think if you just look at, you know, obviously we're not game developers here that work at 343, but we're content creators and we're people who are passionate about what we do. Can you imagine if somebody, like if me and Josh were starting up and someone said, the only way I'm going to listen to your podcast is if it's the exact same structure and flow of Podtacular. If it doesn't sound and play like Podtacular, I'm not going to listen to it. And if that was the case all around, Josh and I aren't going to want a podcast, because we can't be ourselves. We can't let our own ideas creatively flow. You know, if Dustin had to make his like a different podcast, he's going to lose interest in doing it. Like, he's doing Podtacular. He's not doing Sacred Icon. He's not doing Podcast Evolved. He's not doing, you know, any other podcast that's out there. It's him. So it's the same thing. Like, how many passion, like every, I think I really love what it was. One of the, I wish I could remember her name. I would have brought it to this conversation. I remember, but someone who worked at 343, she said, and maybe afterwards we can tag her or something. She said that, think for a moment about how passionate you are about Halo, playing Halo. Usually the people that created that experience oftentimes are more passionate than you are about that, because they made it their career goal to get to a point where they can have a creative investment in it. They're the ones creating it. So, you know, consider for a moment what it feels like when you stomp all over that or say you hate a thing. Like, people have to be creative and passionate to put out a good product. If Microsoft said 343 is going to make different variations of Halo 3 for the next 20, 30 years, these are game developers. These people are not going to want to flock to 343 to continue to ape what Bungie put out in 2007. That doesn't make anyone creative juices flow.
Yeah, why look back constantly? Like, you're not going to do anything new if you're just constantly looking behind you.
Exactly.
You know? I don't even think I would want to work. I would want to work there if we were just purposely making Halo 3 till the rest of time, because I'd be like, what can I bring new to the table? I can't offer a new idea because we're just making Halo 3.
It's like, this formula works. Let's keep turning it out again 10 years later. Why isn't this working? This worked before.
Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, if they made a carbon copy type Halo 3 with the same mechanics and shooting and everything now, it would probably do well enough to justify the development. But is that what Microsoft, is that what 343 wants to do, is just continue to get by and just like, this is enough to sell that we can continue to make games? But like, they're, you know, these passionate people, they're looking at the industry, they're going, man, look what Apex Legends doing, look what Fortnite's doing, look what Death Stranding's doing, look what Horizon Zero Dawn's doing. That's really cool new work. Those are cool characters, cool stories, cool modes. Like, I am so, you know, creative people are drawn by other people's creative work. It influences them, it makes them passionate. They go, I want to create something new. I want to create something passionate. If they're looking out at the industry and they're seeing all these new experiences, and then they go into 343 to just continue to build another copy of Halo 3, they're gonna respectively leave and go to another developer where they can let their creativeness flow. You know, it's just
yeah. I remember, like, for me, I remember thinking, like, I was really harsh on Halo 4 out of the gate, and at the time I felt like it was justified, but it's like, we don't give enough credit to them, I think, as a community overall. Like, I love 343, but I think even in the past, I didn't give them enough credit, because it's like, these guys aren't just people who have been like, 343's not been around for like 20, 30 years, like some of these other studios and stuff like that. Like, these guys started not too long ago still, and they inherited one of the biggest IPs, you know, of all time. And you're taking this new sort of like, you're taking all these new people and you're bringing them all together and you're saying, okay, remember that Halo franchise? Okay, we want you guys to continue it. And like,
here's one of the biggest games of all time, go.
Yeah, exactly. I can't imagine what that's like. And I think some people just play those games and forget that they, you know, the 343 that's on the box, and they would play something like Halo 4 or Halo 5, and they'd just be like, you know, they're so they're so stuck in the old ways that they're just forgetting that this is a new team with new ideas, trying to find a way to respect what's been done, but also make their own version of it. Because like Brian, like you said, like, you don't want to just get stuck making someone else's game in your own way. Like, that's just, you don't grow even as a person.
No. Well, and take the mindset of, okay, if it was Bungie, like, look at 343 as a split off of Bungie. And maybe you had two different sides of Bungie, one that was the Destiny side, one that was still did the Halo side. Put 343 in there, you put the Bungie logo on every Halo game that's been ever made, does your perception change? And for some people, it probably would be, because it's like, oh, that's Bungie. Bungie started Halo. They have this idea. They're good with it.
Yeah, I mean,
like, you cannot get tied up in the fact that it's 343 Industries stamp on the box instead of Bungie.
The truth?
Yes, Bungie did amazing things to bring Halo to reality, and what they started will live on to be a legacy. No doubt about that. But you can't look at the company. It's the people behind making the product that really is the important
100%, piece. 100%, dude. And the product that comes out is a culmination of all those specific people's work to make that product. Yes. And that's what I've said before on the podcast. I'm like, if Bungie announced that they were partnering with Microsoft to make their own Halo nowadays, there might be some noticeable DNA type things you can tell that's like, oh, this does feel like a Bungie Halo. But hugely influential people to those early titles, Marcus Leto, Marty O'Donnell, Joe Staten, Paul Russell, Paul Bertone, I can keep going on, Jamie Grissomier, none of them, not a single person I just listed, is at Bungie anymore. None of their influence will be on that product. They're not going to work on it. So you're going to get something different because you have different people working on the game. And you're going to have, how many people work? Bungie's last Halo was 10 years ago. How many developers work at Bungie right now who played the Halo games as fans and then got a job at Bungie? Like, they're not reflective of the team that worked on Halo in 2010 or 7. They are new blood.
Well, some of them are.
Yes, definitely. Some of 100%, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, all the new people that have been hired in post-Halo Bungie, those people had zero influence on Halo, and they're now new. So, like, why would we think for a moment that, like, the name attached to the box, like you're saying, Dustin, is going to make the difference in how the game's going to be?
You have people that are passionate about making the game. You have people that are having it in their best interest to make a game that fans will enjoy. So it's not like 343 is actively out there looking at feedback and saying, nope, they're just wrong.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what... That's that would wreck them as a studio, and they wouldn't be a studio anymore if they did that. And to take it back around to the BR discussion, like, yes, Halo doesn't need a BR. But Halo would so much benefit from BR because the universe in which it's been created allows for that better than any other franchise, I think. And to take another example, Firefight. We wouldn't have had the joys of ODST Firefight if it wasn't for other games, namely Gears of War that came out with Horde mode. We wouldn't have had Firefight if it didn't copy, but if it wasn't influenced by Horde mode.
Sure.
And people absolutely love and adore Firefight. There's like, Halo 3 was definitely a big hype for MCC on PC. The next biggest hype is ODST Firefight.
Yep.
And we don't even have ODST Firefight in MCC right now. That's coming across the board. Like, every single Halo fan, including PC Halo fans, that's been the big excitement lately is, oh, we're finally getting this OG Firefight experience.
I love ODST Firefight. And the thing is, I remember being, I think I was 17 when ODST Firefight came out, and I was a much less analytical person when I was 17 than I am now. And I remember playing ODST and going, oh, this Firefight, this is, okay, this is their version of the Gears of War 2 thing. This is cool. This is badass. Like, they're just doing, I wasn't the super analytical, like, aware of the industry type person, but it was obvious to me. I'm like, Gears 2 Horde came out in 2008. This is their version. This is dope. I love it. This is great. Of course, as I get older, you know, you start to get more jaded, you get more analytical, you go, oh, they're trying to do what someone else does. That's not Halo. You know, but how many people who, like I said, how many people who are younger right now, maybe, and you don't have to be younger, but maybe there's a 12-year-old out there right now who's excited for the next Halo, and they're like, well, there's a mode called, let's call there's a mode called Orbital Drop Shock. It's the mode. Kid plays it, and he's like, you drop out of pods, and there's like, the Halo ring keeps breaking apart until it gets smaller in the middle. This reminds me a lot of, this is, they're doing their own Fortnite thing.
Yeah.
This is badass.
Yep.
I love this, yep. You know, and he never thinks more yep. of it. And then there's all, so many of us who like haven't even played the game yet. And we're like, there's a VR Halo's dead, you know,
writing so, it off.
Yeah. It's a great point.
Yeah.
Now, I'm definitely someone that would be open to that. Cause I think for the same reasons we've said, like that some, I like the opposing, I guess the well, I can't think of the word for it, but anyway, the opposite of what we've been saying is like, that's going to open up so many doors. Like you've said, Brian, like you said, Dustin, like something like that would bring so many people in that like all those kids that want to play it, like that want to play Fortnite and all that stuff. And then there's this new game that's Halo and everyone can play it. And like, oh, you don't have a Series X or a PC. You got an Xbox One. Fine. You can still play it. There's all this accessibility and all this, just all these options. And then like that could always lead that person. That could be someone's foot in the door. Right? That could get someone yes. to try out Forge. And yes. then suddenly they're like, what is this? I can make my own maps. We can do this and this and this. And like, what is zombies? What is that? You know, and it's just going to like go from there. And without kind of giving the opportunity for that stuff to exist and just kind of shunning it, we close the door for that. We close the door on the possibility of that happening because we're stuck.
And it hurts the community so much because you're limiting what people can experience. You're dictating other people's experience, and that is something that we should not be doing. It's okay to have differing opinions. That like everyone experiences things differently, which is the beauty of a franchise. That's really what makes the Halo franchise so amazing, is there are so many differing opinions out there, and there's so many different ways that people interpret their experience with Halo. We can't stifle that. We should never definitely. Stifle that.
Brian and I don't mention Forge a lot on our show just because we've never personally played it too much. Like, we've messed around with it, but, like, that's never been a big focal point for us. But you think about the people that have played that and the huge Forge communities that are out there and, like, Sean at Forge Labs and stuff like that and, like, people who just go crazy with that stuff and you see what's out there and it's like, there's this whole other facet of Halo that,
we're not
like,
even experiencing.
I don't know is... that I'm not experiencing personally, but like that grabs people. And some people, like, okay, when Halo 5 came out and it didn't have Forge at launch, for me personally, selfishly, I'm like, I don't mess with Forge too much. No big deal. Multiplayer is there, campaign's there. I'm good. But for other people, it's like, that's a big
like how you
deal.
Feel
and rightfully
night,
so.
That's how they felt not having Forge.
Yeah. And like those people feeling that way are just as valid in their feelings as I am wanting multiplayer there and campaign there and all that kind of stuff, because it's like that for them is one of the biggest draws, if not the big draw, you know? And just because they're different than me shouldn't make me any more superior or anything like that, or them superior. It should even us out and like, oh, hey, you like this different aspect of Halo? That's cool. Oh, you like,
right.
You like doing machinimas with it? Like, that's mm-hmm. cool. Like, let's talk about it. Like, I think that's awesome. Like, I mean, Brian's someone who's so much more lower focused, and I've gotten more into that these last couple years, coming more from the multiplayer side. But I've done that because I've been someone who I enjoy the multiplayer because I love the campaigns. So it like complements the other, you know? And him kind of talking more about that stuff, just letting me kind of like not be as into that, I felt a sense of acceptance, and I was able to just I wanted to get more immersed. I was just feeding off. Brian wasn't trying to sell me or convince me. He was just talking about why he loved it. And through that, it just opened a door for me. And I know as a community, if we are able to just do that, like so many more people will be like, they'll want to come try it out more. They'll be more incentivized to, just because it's like, you can like whatever you like. If you only like this one little tiny aspect of it, that's cool. You like Halo. That's
that
awesome.
Everybody who's at, Everybody who's consistently involved in the Halo community. Now, if somebody's listening to this podcast just wants something to listen to because they like Halo, you know, maybe I'm not speaking to you as much, but for people who are consistently in this community, they're on Twitter, they're on the forums, they're engaging with different podcasts, YouTube videos. For some reason, they've chosen to spend a lot of their time in the community. I would just ask yourself, are you a part of the community because you love Halo and you want the community to be strong and awesome? Like, you want the community to be good, a good place to go, a strong community? Or are you there because you, and we all, everyone here makes the same mistakes, but are you here because you selfishly want to try to make sure Halo gets catered to you? And if you tell yourself honestly that you are only here to be catered to selfishly, if you just know, acknowledge that, well, then at least you know that, and you can, the way you act is reflected on that. But if you tell yourself, you know what, I love this community, I love Halo, I really want it to be better, then I think that's where you go. If that's what you want, maybe don't be so concerned with how it caters to you. You know, because if you really want to see this community be awesome and you want to be part of it, you want to go to Outpost Discoveries, you want to be a guest on a podcast, like, if that's what you love, then maybe change your perspective a bit. But once again, if you're just here selfishly, and like I said, we've made those mistakes too, I'm not singling anyone out, then at least you've acknowledged that that's why you're here, and you know right. that your actions are selfish, and that's okay. I mean, I don't think it's the way I would want to choose to go about it, but at least you can say, I guess, to sum it up, what I'm saying, it's just basically, if you love this community, foster it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Well, we're coming up on time for the first part of our discussion. We're going to be taking the second part of our discussion over to the Sacred Icon podcast side of things. So I want to thank Brian and Josh for coming on our podcast. Thank you guys so much for taking time out of your morning. Where can people find you?
Ooh, thanks so much for having us, man. It's crazy to think if a year ago, if Josh would be like, dude, we're gonna be on the Podtacular. You're like, nah, dude, no, we're not. So this is awesome, dude. Really appreciate you inviting us, and glad that you stuck with inviting us after we were like, don't have time now, can't get there. Really appreciate that. But yeah, to find us, the best place to interact with us is going to be at Sacred Icon Halo on Twitter. That's where we're most responsive. We have a website, sacrediconhalo.com. The podcast is on all major platforms. If you want to talk to me specifically, I'm at Brian's Bane. Josh is at Jovial Joshy. I won't go through all the other business spiels because we can save that for ours, but that's basically, if you want to reach out to us, best place, Sacred Icon Halo on Twitter. Josh, you got anything to add to that? Or?
Yeah. I know. I was just going to say, Dustin, thank you. This has been a genuine honor.
Because we on Podtacular.
Brian as well, but it's just on Podtacular.
I was going to ask for at least one of those.
It was just a matter of time. But no, man, this is love you guys. I remember back in the day, like, I didn't really listen to podcasts as much back in like around the Halo 3 time. I was starting to just get in there, and I remember hearing stuff like Podtacular, and it's kind of surreal to cool. think I'm on there. I'm like, I'm on Podtacular. I'm going to go, I want to call my mom after and be like,
oh, I made it. I'm on Podtacular.
Yeah. I'm famous, mom. I'm famous.
Yeah. Great, honey. I don't know what it is, but good. It's good for you. Make sure
you
take the garbage
anyway.
Out for me.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, you can catch our podcast over on Twitch Thursday nights for our live stream recordings of the podcast. That takes place 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. We also have our Fragment Fridays, which take place at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and our Achieving Halo at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Sundays. You can find us across the internet on social media. We are also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can check out our Spartan Company, our Xbox Club, and our Discord server. Just search for Podtacular, and you'll find everything that you need to know. Shout out to our patrons who help contribute to keep the lights on here at Podtacular. Shout out to Frizzled, Confal, and Leberkus. Thank you for your continued support in Patreon. You can also support us through Amazon, through our affiliate link, podtacular.com/Amazon, and subscribing to us on Twitch, or donating to us directly through PayPal. Again, check out Sacred Icon Halo. We will be doing the second part of this podcast over there. Until then, keep on fragging them trucks.